See, when I first started working on this stuff, and part of the reason I started working on it is because I met Coleman and Warren and those guys almost 10 years ago. In fact, they stuck away. They both stuck away. They knew it was coming again. But that's okay. I'll say it at the end, because they got to come back eventually. But back when I first was, I used to work on police and prisons and this kind of stuff, and I burned out. I went to one of more funerals. I've still gone to more funerals for young people than I've gone to high school graduation. And I'm a commencement speaker doing the network and all. And I burned out. And it was actually coming down to Santa Barbara and going to places like Vernon County. I actually met Coleman at a retreat that Julia Butterfly was doing. Remember Julia Butterfly? Is that retreat? I met Julia and Coleman on the same day, and they just both blew my mind. It was full of ecological consciousness. And I actually then started trying to get some ecological ideas to work in places like Oakland. And so really coming back here and getting a chance to be 10 years later, getting a chance to talk on behalf of what Coleman was doing, I know the power of it because it actually changed my life. And so I say that because I think it's very important that we're on a journey here. And to your question, when we first started working on this, we had this amazing thing that was called a functioning economy.
Right? So
now, it was hyped, it was propped up on three things that turned out not to be very sustainable. One was credit, instead of smart savings and thrift like our grandparents. The other was consumption rather than production. And the third was this, disposability and ecological destruction rather than ecological restoration. But that was the old economy that we collapsed in 2008. But the old economy, credit, consumption, and ecological destruction. And the collapse in 2008, as far as I'm concerned, shows that model doesn't work. The next American economy will have to be based on conservation and thrift, like our grandparents, local production, and ecological restoration. That's not something that hippies are going to have to impose on us. I hope that they do. But and get busy. But it's just the only path forward. It's the only thing that's going to actually make sense. Now, to your point, when the collapse happened, people are like, well, man, you changed your rhetoric, it's so different now. It's like, no, I've always been working to try to help poor people. We just got a whole bunch more of them. We had 20 million people fall out of the middle class, into poverty or near poverty. And so, you're right, we now have a much bigger challenge to both re-employ the newly poor and employ the traditionally poor. So our job got bigger. What that means is that we can't just be encouraging people to get a green job. We also have to be training people, these young folks who have so much entrepreneurial skill and talent, for better or for worse. We have to be training them to give green jobs, to create green jobs, to be green entrepreneurs. That is going to be the next step forward, because the existing, the formal economy continues to contract vis-a-vis the population. Now, this actually opens up a whole new set of possibilities for those of us who want to green the economy. Okay? Usually we talk, as we did, about food and fuel. Those are the two big things we talk about. We change the way we power our buildings and our machines. That's called the green energy revolution. We change the way we power our bodies. That's called the organic food revolution. And if you change both those systems at the same time, you can green the economy. If you green the food and the fuel, you can move the whole system. That's usually how our discussion is bounded. But now we get a chance to have a bigger discussion. Why? The formula, if we wring out of this economy every green job I can think of, you can add about 3.1 million jobs. Which is pretty good. We got 2.4 million green jobs right now. You probably get another 3.1 million. Then you're only down by 17 million. What do you guys do for the rest of it? Here's where your genius is required. When the formal economy contracts, it leaves a space called the informal economy. The informal economy is usually negative. It's usually called crime. Sociologically speaking. It's called prostitution, drug sales, theft, money. Right? That's usually what the informal economy is. And economics of desperation. Positive informal economy, an economics of cooperation. What if you could have an American Dream 2.0? It's shareable. But we actually use our technological genius to help each other share. You're at Kiva, Kickstart, Airbnb, Zipcar. There's a whole set of technologies that lets people share. How many people here have a power drill in your home? How many of you used it today? Just tell you, it's easy.
Saturday, yeah.
Smart. How many of you used it this week? See if you guys are busy. Do it yourself first. Do you know how many minutes the average power drill is used before it's thrown away?
No. No way.
Think about it.
They throw it away.
3 months later. Zip, zip. These things are almost never used. You heard of things called libraries? Socialism, you know. Yeah. Conspiracies. Imagine if instead of everybody having to go out and buy all these different products and all these different things and feeling terrible because we can't, we use technology to help us share, be a nation of neighbors. That would allow incomes to go down, but quality of life to go up.
Yeah. Woo-hoo. That's it.
party so much, I'd like to see one. When you have monopoly control of the energy system by these big energy companies that dictate to you 12 times a year how much you're going to pay for your energy, how many asthma inhalers are going to have in your community, or how much fracking is going to go on in your community, that's not freedom. That's not liberty. Why should we be dictated to by these big energy monopolies that won't let us? You actually don't have the right in America to power your own house.
That's right.
Anybody got solar power? You got to jump through all kinds of hoops. And you certainly don't have the right to sell that power back onto the grid at a competitive price. Right? Why shouldn't we have the freedom and the liberty to power our own communities and to sell that power onto a public grid and be able to? Don't get me started on this thing. But, I like markets. I like free markets. But it's not a free market when our solar companies and our wind companies and every other alternative fuel source has to go up against government-protected monopolies. It's a government-protected monopoly when oil companies get three subsidies and we have to beg for half of the subsidy. They get three subsidies. First of all, the Pentagon spends 80% of its budget helping them get their private for-profit product here from the Middle East. That's a heck of a subsidy. They bring a private for-profit product here, and we spend money to the Pentagon to protect that product. Number two, we give them direct subsidies, direct money, tax breaks, etc., even though BP made $62 million today in profit. Now listen, I won't say that again, because even in Santa Barbara, $62 million. In one day, you can go back to the Pharaohs. You won't find anybody making $62 million a day in pure profit. They do it every day. And lastly, they get a pollute for free. If you get a fine for littering, you can't pollute for free. You get a fine for littering, that $25 fine is $25 more than we've ever required any of these dirty energy companies to pay for dumping megatons of carbon into the atmosphere. Dangerous form of pollution. That's wrong. That's wrong. So, when you get a triple subsidy and we have to beg and scratch for a little tax credits, I'd like to see a free market in the energy system. And I think you start talking that way. The last question was, how do we convert non-believers? From my point of view, a lot of what we're talking about is common sense. Clean air is better than dirty air for the health of our children. That should be common ground. Notice, I'm not talking, and I think it's very important that we point this out to you. I'm not asking for green welfare. I'm talking about green work. I'm not, you ever heard me talk about entitlements? I'm calling for more enterprise. Let's be very clear that the distortion campaign and the smear campaign that's run is run by people who are the only ones on the planet that have something to lose by us moving to a cleaner and greener system. So we have to change the rules. Markets work according to rules. But right now, the rules are wacky. Right now, the rules favor dirty energy over clean energy. That's wrong. Right now, the rules favor the poison-based agriculture system. And the agribusiness that we have over our organic farmers, that's wrong. Right now, the rules favor big, mean banksters, right, over credit unions and good bankers who want to be right by our community. So the markets work, but they work according to rules, and you've got to change the rules. Which brings me to
Occupy. Yeah.
Stand up and pull me around with
you.
on YouTube tomorrow, don't worry. You know these young people on Occupy Wall Street? Here's what's up here. Do you know the polling data just came back in? They are more popular. First of all, they're twice as popular as the T-Bar. Tell our truths with as much audacity as other folks tell their lies. And it's all right. We can tell the truth. They went to the scene of the crime against our future. They went to the scene of the crime against our future. With nothing but some sleeping bags and some, you know, slightly poorly written signs. Big grizzly bear coming at you, and you spray the pepper. two young women who didn't even have a slide. They were just standing there, directly in the face. Mm-hmm. And they fell to their knees. I mean, if you've seen this video, and they fell to their knees and just, you know, screaming in pain. And there was a provocation. They were hoping, I think that officer was hoping, that these young people would respond by them, because that was so over the top. Not only did they not respond violently, they came back the next day and issued a statement. They said, "We just want you to know, we're not fighting against the police. We're fighting for them. We're concerned about their pensions. We're concerned about their children. The police are a part of the 99%. That's a moral movement. That's February 1st, 1960. When those kids went down and sat at that lunch counter. Said, we're not going to throw a punch. We're sitting there, we're going to stand up for the best in this country. And they changed America. That generation, we got another one. And this generation is bigger than the baby boomers. It's more diverse. It's more technologically savvy. It's more ecologically committed. It's more communitarian in its values than any generation. They stood up in 2008, made history. Sat down in 2010, may as well have got history. Now they're standing up again. And I'm going to tell you right now that if we stand with them and follow that basic moral creed that they laid out there, that grace, that beauty, and we resist the temptation to make this be a movement of the 99% against the 1%. No, that's not true. This thing is too beautiful to become that. Because then it becomes, when you knock off this 1%, then you knock off the next and next, then you know. That's not what we're talking about. If we stand with these women and help them create a movement 99% for the 100%. Mm-hmm. For the 100%. Woo. That we need everybody. We're not mad at anybody because they're a banker. In fact, we need more financial geniuses. We're mad when they act like banksters and rewrite the rules for their own benefit and try to buy their own congressperson. No, don't be a bankster. But if you want to be a banker, you want to help us solve these problems, if you want to take that financial blanket off of these young people and cut them a deal on their student loans and help these homeowners stand up and invest in green companies and help our small farmers, if you want to be a banker, we need that 100%. If we can let that kind of beauty come pouring back into our politics, led by this new generation, we can have a green economy strong enough to lift people out of poverty. And America can be a leader in the new century, not in war, not in pollution, not in incarceration rates, not in economic disparities, but we can be a leader in showing a rainbow, multiracial world with multiple faiths, and multiple genders, and multiple sexuality, how a rainbow, multiracial, multi-ethnic, multi-faith, multi-country came together to solve the biggest problems facing humanity. And we can be the country that we promised as young people we were going to be, a country with liberty and justice for all. Thank you very much.